I'm Robert Harrison for Entitled Opinions. Let's get a 21st century groove going before we head back to the long 19th century. Yeah, Steve Hunter giving us the vibe. The show is called Entitled Opinions, so here we go with one of mine, a minority opinion to be sure. 150 years ago, on July 10th, Jeanne-Clémence Proust gave birth to a boy whom she would go on to coddle and pamper, nurturing in him a ferocious egotism that she would be forced to indulge, negotiate, and manage. She instilled in him a love of the arts, and upon her death in 1905, she bestowed upon him a vast fortune, all of which enabled her son to become the towering literary figure we know today as Marcel Proust. Whoever loves Proust's seven-volume opus In Search of Lost Time owes Jeanne-Clémence a big debt of gratitude for bringing Marcel into the world and for putting up with his importunate demands on her devotion during his childhood and youth, which Marcel so fondly remembers in that sprawling, uninhibited novel. In Search of Lost Time is not for everybody, and I include myself in that category. Back in college, I had a professor who, when I expressed frustration with the book's vagaries, assured me that I would grow into Proust if I just stuck with him long enough. Well, even professors can be wrong at times, and after decades of periodically returning to Proust to give him another chance, I now know that I will never fit into the gauzy mantle of that novel. It's an exquisite fabric, to be sure, but I feel awkward and even ridiculous when I put it on. As for its prose, it has that spongy, honeyed taste of a Madeleine, which I personally find slightly sickening. Nor am I enraptured by Proust's highly touted ruminations on time, memory, and a higher order of reality, glimpsed in moments of heightened sensation. To each his own, I suppose. Proust has many august venerators whose entitled opinions I respect, but don't share. When I hear George Steiner, whom I greatly admire, say, as he did in an interview, that, quote, Proust has expanded the possibilities of human consciousness as very few have done, Shakespeare and Dante maybe, but not many others, I can only shake my head and wonder what kind of sorcery is at work here, or what is it that I'm missing? It's not that I don't understand why some people love Proust and why the world of Combray enchants them, or why the 4,000-page novel can become addictive. I do. In Search of Lost Time has the one salient feature of any literary masterpiece. It is unique. There's nothing remotely like it. It's written at the edge of sleep. It slows down the pace of thought and perception. It lulls you with the undulating waves of its liquid, languorous prose. It has a distinctly musical effect on readers. The cadence of its sentences, the recurring melodies or thematic motifs, and the way its successive volumes represent so many movements of a unified composition, all this makes for a kind of symphony in words. I also get that the novel opens its doors and invites you into the glittering world of the Belle Époque in France, which, along with the 19th century, came to an end with World War I. Even today, in our wholly altered historical reality, many among us can't resist the allure of an effete and self-enclosed society populated by rich people, artists, and aristocrats. As well as their servants, of course. You have to have the servants. I think I read somewhere that Downton Abbey may be having a seventh season. Oh my. Then there is Marcel, the narrator-author, who passes through the external facades of the novel's characters into their inner psyches, somewhat like Proust's contemporary Henry James did with his characters. The difference between Proust and James, however, is that James maintained a certain tact and reserve toward his characters, allowing them to withdraw behind veils of discretion. A Jamesian character tends to retreat into indeterminacy and reticence, while a Proustian character tends to get exposed to one degree or another. Which is fine. I have nothing against narrative indiscretion. My problem with Proust is that Marcel aggressively draws you, the reader, into the deeper recesses of his own idiosyncrasy. He doesn't invite but drags you into his confidence. In psychology, this is called annexation. Proust annexes his reader by disclosing the most private aspects of his selfhood and thereby forcing you into intimacy with him. So yes, I understand the bewitching appeal of Marcel Proust, yet when I read him, I feel like the person in Ezra Pound's poem Endurance who says, "I am homesick after my own kind," which is a roundabout way of saying, "I don't share Marcel's sensibility. I would not want to spend an evening with any of the novel's 2,000 characters. And among all the dead authors I would like to meet in person if I could, Proust ranks near the bottom of my list. If only because I think Samuel Beckett was right in his scintillating short book on Proust when he wrote of, I quote, two tendencies highly developed in Proust, his domination complex and his infantilism. That's a combination I can do without. I would rather sit on the deck of the Nelly and listen to Marlowe spin his yarns than sit at the table of the Verdurins. Question. Is In Search of Lost Time a novel from which you could not remove or alter any of its constituent parts without vitiating the whole? I'm not sure. I tend to believe that by streamlining large portions of it and reducing it to maybe half its size, one could improve it considerably or at least render it less tedious. Yet maybe the genius of Proust's novel lies precisely in its excess and overflow, like Moby Dick or Finnegan's Wake, and maybe by condensing it, one would in fact denature it. I certainly would not want to tinker with it, that's for sure. For all its stylistic and descriptive expansiveness, In Search of Lost Time remains, from the psychological point of view at least, a claustrophobic novel. I'm referring here not so much to the confined social world of the Swans and the Guermantes and so forth, but to the passion of jealousy that marks the novel's center of gravity. For Proust and his narrator, love and jealousy are interchangeable terms. Love has only one modality, the compulsive desire to gain full possession of the loved one. Not simply of the loved one's body, but of her devotion, attention, and innermost desires. In Proust's mental universe, only the torment of failing to achieve such possession counts as love. Marcel declares in propositional form, I quote, "We love only what we do not wholly possess." So much of Proust's novel wallows in the murky depths of this self-devouring and other-devouring passion for possession. We see it at work with Swann, the Baron de Chadeloup, and Marcel himself. Marcel would never understand the sentiment in Rainer Rilke's Slumber Song, where the speaker, comparing his beloved to a book, asks, "Will you be able to sleep without my closing you and leaving you alone with what is yours?" By his own admission, Marcel desired total and exclusive possession of his mother when he was a child. Later in life, he carried over this same vampiric desire into his relationships with women, above all Albertine. When he believes he is taking possession of Albertine, Marcel starts losing interest in her. When he once again suspects there is something in her that eludes and excludes him, his passion gets re-inflamed. The only time he is at peace with Albertine is when she is asleep beside him as a smooth surface of physical presence without secrets or hidden depths. Or so he believes, because in reality, the other is never so far out of reach as when he or she is asleep, as Rilke's Slumber Song suggests. In its purest manifestation, jealousy seeks possession through penetration. Again, not so much sexual penetration, but a penetrating knowledge of the inner being of the loved one. This knowing gaze into the interior is always denied to the jealous person, since none of us can ever know another from within. That is to say, know the other subjectively. That's why Marcel goes to such extreme lengths to empirically discover where and with whom and in what manner Albertine spends her time when they are not together. This is a failing proposition, for while external facts may tell us whether we have been betrayed, they will never give us access to the inner psyche of the person who inspires in us a pathological desire for total possession. And Proust was clairvoyant enough to realize this. That's why In Search of Lost Time ends up sublimating the psychology of jealousy into a metaphysics of unknowability. We can never know or truly commune with the other. If Proust had stopped there, we could say that he learned a valuable, if rather obvious, lesson. Yet he went further and put himself and the rest of us in a hermetic box. I quote him, "Man is the creature who cannot come forth from himself, who knows others only in himself, and who, if he asserts the contrary, lies." That statement tells me all I need to know about why I will never grow into Proust, why I will always feel suffocated by his novel, and why I can live without the sublimated solipsism that he called art's redemption of reality. I'm happy to assert the contrary of that statement and leave it to the gods to decide whether I lie. To assert, that is, that I am someone who exists outside myself, that I come forth from myself day in and day out, and that I know myself through others rather than know others through me. In sum, I live ecstatically. And that's why, from here on out, I will no longer revisit the shadow world of Proust's masterpiece. I'm Robert Harrison, and I hereby declare an end to our year-long hiatus and the beginning of a new season of Entitled Opinions. We have a number of new shows coming your way in the weeks ahead, so stay tuned and spread the word. Take care.
She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looks. me about her. What could I do?